and welcome inside my chewy head, where this season I'm having a mental workout, talking to mental health experts and finding out exactly what it is that they do for a living. It's goggles on, mouth guards in and minds open as we dive straight into the conversation. Okay, welcome back to the Chewy Head podcast. I'm here today with Laura. Hi, Laura.
Welcome. Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for coming on. So, Laura, is my understanding correct when I say that you are a nutritionist?
Yeah, so like my background is in psychology and communications, and then I went on to study nutrition and then became a specialist in gut health. Yeah. And as I went on, I also struggled with disordered eating and I had mood irregularities and like I suffered from depression and anxiety and all these kind of things. And as time went on, it was just the IBS protocols that are out there is usually like elimination diets or low FODMAP diet, which is cutting away different types of food groups. And for someone that has a history of an eating disorder, that just did not work for me. I can't eliminate foods in that way. And it was just too much on my body. So I had to come up with a different method, which I now use a method called the free method inside of my programs to really specialize in this whole gut brain connection. Right. I had no idea for so long that my IBS was actually linked to my depression and anxiety, or that my depression and anxiety was linked to my IBS. And so after, it fascinated me. My whole life, I was attacking both of those separately. Yeah. And then when I worked them in together, it's now been years since I've had either issues with either of those. And so IBS, after you have eliminated maybe all the other things that could have caused gut issues like parasites or Crohn's or like different kind of things, after you ruled that out, it comes down to, we don't know what's wrong with you is basically what the IBS diagnosis is. Right. And so what they found out is just, it's a gut brain dysregulation.
Okay.
And so what to heal that, you actually have to heal both, but it's kind of not the approach a lot of people take. They usually take a food first elimination approach, which is not my jam.
That's interesting because, yeah, we kind of all know, don't we, that our minds are actually physically in our brains and therefore part of our physical body. But I think, you know, you're right in saying that people often have a disconnect in thinking that things which they might be feeling or thinking emotionally and psychologically can impact on their physical well-being and physical health. So obviously IBS is perhaps one of those, well, definitely is one of those ways in which it kind of manifests. Do you know of any other ways in which maybe mental health impacts on your physical well-being?
Yeah. I mean, like trauma, right? Like trauma or stress and cortisol levels and all that kind of stuff. You're seeing through somatic therapy, you're seeing how it kind of is kept in the body. So you'll see inflammation and then you'll start to see illnesses come up. You'll see like weird back pain, or you get a lot of hip pain because that's where you store a lot of your trauma, is in your hip and in your shoulders. And so when you can release all of that stuff, you help to actually heal the mind and vice versa. And so that's kind of where this whole route started to take me. And I was like, oh, this is super interesting. Cause what happened with me is I was on this mission of healing my gut, right? Like I spent 15 years on a mission to be like, something doesn't feel right. Like, I don't know. And then finally like sitting down with my naturopath, she was like, do you want to talk about how your depression is linked to your gut? I was like, what are you talking about? Like one, I didn't know I was depressed because I was so used to feeling that way. Mm-hmm. Like that was my baseline normal wavelength. And then two, I had no idea about, I mean, I heard about the gut brain connection and everything about it, but like, even in my studies, we were taking a food first approach. And then when I was studying psychology, it was medications and therapy. Yeah. It was never like, hey, do you want to tune into like your high sugar diet and like the crap you're literally putting into your body and how that's relating to what's going on in your body. And I was like, oh, how interesting.
So you mentioned that you obviously suffered from depression and that you didn't know that you had depression, and you had like a baseline that you just considered normal. Would you be able to explain what that baseline was and what that felt like?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was diagnosed with depression when I was 13. Right. And so as I went on, I decided I didn't want to take medications. I don't recommend that to anyone. That was just anyone that's taken antidepressants know when you add birth control to the mix and you add other things, it's such a headache trying to figure out the right dosage that isn't toxic to your body, basically. And I was like, well, this is crap. Like, I don't want to do this. And what happens with the antidepressants is it just makes you numb. Like, yes, it takes away the pain that you're feeling, but like, you also don't feel the excitement of life. So it was kind of just one of those things. And I was like, well, if this is going to be my brain, I'm going to go study it because I want to learn. Mm-hmm. So that's when I stopped taking my medications. But I was never happy. I was always angry. Like, I was known as that like anger girl, and like I would fly off the handle all the time, and like my emotions were all over the board, and I was always, I just thought dark and stormy was my normal. And then like I unexpectedly lost my mom on my last year of university. It's okay though. It's one of those awakening things that you kind of, you can respond to it or you can use it as something to learn from. And I chose to be a victim for a really long time in my life, because my whole life I felt I was broken, because that's what doctors told me. They're like, hey, something's wrong with you. Here's medications. You're just, that's your borderline. I'm like, okay, cool. And I went with that. I played the victim in my life. And then after my mom passed, I ran away to Asia.
Okay.
As we do. But what happens if you don't know yourself, you're just going to find yourself in another storm in a different country. And I ended up falling into a very scary life there, got into like addictions and got into a really, really abusive, toxic relationship. And that was then one day when I was sitting like on my balcony, just like, cause I was in, I attempted suicide multiple times, contemplated suicide all the time. And it was at that moment I was like, okay, like, I don't actually want to die, but I don't want to feel this way anymore. Like, I don't want to be this person anymore. I knew there was so much more to be felt and to be done. And that's when I was like sitting in a cafe with my friend. Like, after that moment, I was like, okay, like, I'm choosing to live, but what now? Like, what do I do to actually change this that I'm feeling? And so I was sitting in a cafe with my friend, like, what should I do? Like, I'm sitting in the middle of Asia. I'm in a shit relationship. I'm in a shit situation with my life. Sorry for my
voice. No, it's all right.
And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And like, I was in my swamps of sadness. Like, I didn't know what to do next. I was like teaching English. I'm not an English teacher, but what have you. And she's like, well, you like you're obsessed with nutrition. Why don't you go study it? And like, at that point, like I was in heaps of my eating disorder, because when the world is happening so much around you, what's the one thing you can control? Your body and your plate. So I was hyper aware of foods because I was afraid of all of them because they were attacking my body. And I was obsessed with working out because I was so anxious and depressed. So that was my like endorphin kick and control. Mm-hmm. You should probably go learn about it. Like, in an unhealthy way, you like food a lot, but like, you should probably go learn about it. And that's what kind of set me on that path for nutrition. And it was just on a mission of trying to heal myself, because I needed something. I needed a purpose, because I didn't want to lose my life, and I wanted to do something bigger than myself. Like, since I was young, my dad would always ask me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to change the world. And like, that meant nursing. But then I saw blood one time and I was like, absolutely not. Like, I'm not in for this. And so I always had that drive inside of me, but I also had this dark and stormy cloud. And as I started to progress and like go on this mission of like, okay, like, how do I take one step each day that puts me on the right path? Mm-hmm. I figured out, I mean, fell into this whole love of the gut brain connection and realized like, okay, so if I'm eating the right things, I'm moving with the right things, I'm surrounding myself with the right people. Okay. Like, day by day, I'm getting out of this dark and stormy, like I'm getting out of my swamps of sadness. And I was able to now create a company called Healing to Happy, which speaks for itself in that kind of realm.
Interesting. So if I came to you and I was struggling with IBS, you mentioned this gut brain connection thing. So what would that entail in terms of how would you help me to recover from my IBS and maybe also from depression, if it turned out that I had depression? Do you ever have patients who don't have depression? They just have IBS.
Yeah. Both. And usually it goes like anxiety or some kind of low grade in that way, because by the time they come to work with me, they've tried everything else. Like, I have courses for the people that are just starting out on their IBS journey that just got diagnosed. Yeah. The people that work with me one-on-one, they've tried everything. They've been at this for like 20 years. They've gone in, they've had like colonoscopies and endoscopies, and they've had like tubes in funky places and all this kind of stuff. So they're anxious around food, right? Because their body has been hurting them for so long.
Yeah.
There's that kind of dysbiosis happening in this disconnection. And so the way I work with people is not food. I look at what the foundation is. I look at, when did your body stop metabolizing food and break in using food as fuel? Because that at root is what's causing it. It's not essentially like gluten, dairy, soy that everyone likes to be fancy and say we're not eating anymore, but actually, why is your body not breaking this food down anymore to begin with? Because a healthy body can digest all types of food. You should be able to enjoy a slice of pizza without having to run to the bathroom instantly or feeling bloated and bogged down and like all the kind of symptoms or like having that nasty heartburn, you should be able to eat that. So I work at that foundation.
Yeah.
And that's part of the F in freedom is getting to the foundations. And then the R is the reprogramming because the body, the microbiome, so the gut-brain connection, you actually, they're in constant communication all the time. And our body is made up of trillions of bacteria. And it controls every single thing about us, from the foods we crave, to the weight that we hold, to the moods that we have, everything. Mm-hmm. And so we can get that back in balance when we can actually reprogram that based off of the food that we're eating, the thoughts that we're thinking, the things that we're doing, what we're surrounding ourselves with. When we can get that back in balance, we can reprogram it to actually be able to metabolize the healthy, good foods for us, but also be able to get back on track to be able to handle normal eating again in moderation. So I help people get back to living their lives normally again through the step-by-step process.
So are you kind of saying there that whether you put on weight or you don't put on weight, you can eat, because obviously we all know that we're all different. Some people, I don't know, they feel like maybe this is inaccurate, but they certainly feel that they put on weight more easily or they are able to eat certain types of foods. You know, some people feel that they can eat foods which are considered to be foods that people would put on weight with and they don't put on weight. And I, you know, if you're in the other camp, you're thinking, this is really unfair. Why was I born with this body that just, you know, everything sticks? So are you kind of saying there that rather than that being genetic, there's a component there which is to do with your thoughts and they kind of influence that or?
No, so our digestion is influenced by our thoughts. So if you're stressed and you're all this kind of stuff, you're not going to be able to actually absorb your food, or your body's going to hold on to that food because it thinks it's in fight or flight mode and it needs to store fuel. So you'll see people that are higher strung or higher stressed, they'll either flush out their food, which is when you see like diarrhea and cramping and all that kind of stuff, and it just goes right through them. Or you'll see people that hold their weight and they hold it in the places, whatever. And it's just inflammation. And so when you can actually calm the nervous system down and get into the parasympathetic nervous system, you get to that healthy weight balance. And I never condone like weight loss. That's not my thing. I actually had gained 35 pounds to heal my gut brain connection, which is the opposite. But what happens is your body gets into homeostasis because we all have a healthy weight set point.
Right.
And especially as women of reproductive age, like we need to have a little bit of junk. Like we can't have like six packs. I'm sorry. Like it isn't a thing when we want to get healthy. It's just not.
So you would say if someone has a six pack, that's not necessarily a sign of good health.
No, it's hardly ever a good sign of good
health. Oh, that is so interesting.
It's like to get there, you have, like I had a six pack. Yeah. You have to cut so much as women, like men are different, but as women of reproductive age, we need to have fat to feel safe. We need to have a little bit of junk. We need to be like 25% body fat. Like we need fat to be safe. That is our protective layer to be producing children. Yeah. That's just what it is. And there are safe and healthy ways of getting six packs and doing things like that. But rarely anyone is doing that. Like we're eating like 14,000 or 1400 calories thinking that's healthy. And I'm like, no, like it's just not.
Well, isn't it 1200 calories is the average recommended intake for a toddler?
Exactly. And like you go on like my fitness pal and it's like, oh, you want to lose a pound in a week, eat 1400 calories. You're like, what? What am I gonna eat today? It baffles me. And so many people fall into that, or like you don't, especially the women I work with, they're so afraid of food at this point that they're not eating anything because it hurts. And that makes sense. And so it's really, it goes beyond aesthetics at this point, which maybe that's what it started. A lot of the women that I work with started with disordered relationships with food, and that's what messed up their microbiome. And so now they're rework their brain and everything.
But I think right. So I have a history myself of an eating disorder, and when I was going through my like, oh, I had an eating disorder, I'm going to empower everyone who's had an eating disorder. I started when I was at university, this like little club of anorexic and bulimic people. It was tragic, it really was. But it was actually really nice because it was trying to empower everyone, even though we had no training or no idea, but we were trying to just, literally every single member of that group had a form of IBS, I would say, or some form of, someone even had colitis, you know, really, really severe. And I kind of noticed that and thought maybe there is a real link there. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's because you're messing up your digestive enzymes. So like you eliminated all these foods for so long, or things were coming out of different ends, but you messed up your microbiome in your digestive enzymes. And now you're not able to take in food again. So you literally have to retrain, one, your brain to be able to calmly eat foods again without freaking out and like counting calories and what have you. But you also have to retrain your microbiome to calm down and be able to digest these foods again. But usually what happens, because you haven't had, say, gluten or dairy in a while because you were afraid of it and wrote, put it on the quote unquote bad food list, you add it back in and you have a flare up and you write it off as being a bad food. But really you're having a flare up because you haven't been working that muscle, essentially. You haven't been working that digestive enzyme. And so when you actually strengthen your metabolic function and your stomach acid, you can take in normal foods like a normal human being. But after having an eating disorder for so long, it's going to be low. Like your stomach acid profile is going to be low because you haven't kept food in your digestive system like normally, you know. And and you're high stress. Like anyone that's had an eating disorder, you're just anxious. You're anxious around all food, like all the time. Like that was, it's like you do that because it's some type of addiction and that's some type of a control. And I mean, speaking from experience, like that's what it was for me, right? And like going through the programs and stuff. But releasing that, you understand, okay, so that was like stress, that was anxiety, that was depression, that's this whole gut brain connection thing going on. You have like your dopamine, your serotonin, your GABA all held in your gut. But if you're not taking care of your gut, you're obviously going to feel anxious in your brain, and you're obviously going to feel
so anxious. They're held in your gut rather than your brain.
Yes, 90% of your serotonin, your happy hormone, held in your gut. And then 50% of your dopamine, your reward hormone, held in your gut. GABA, norepinephrine, these things that help you calm down, held in your gut lining. And so we're chasing, and granted, it's held in your gut. It doesn't cross that gut-brain barrier. You have to eat other foods. You have to, you know, up protein, choline, all that kind of stuff, amino acid protein to actually get it across the blood-brain barrier, but it's held there. So when you keep your body in homeostasis, keep your body in balance, it can actually communicate with each other. And that's how the gut brain axis happens, which actually 80% of the communication goes from your gut to your brain. And it's through the enteric nervous system. So it's
That is so interesting, isn't it? That's so interesting, because obviously you hear about serotonin and you know, when you've had depression and whatever, you know, everyone's like, oh, take medication because this is the serotonin that your brain lacks. And I, as my podcast listeners will know, if they've listened to any other episodes, I had my own story of depression and suicidation, all the rest of it. And I looked into it because I was very anti-medication when I was really depressed and was like, nothing can help me, you know. And that, you know, apparently a depressed brain doesn't necessarily lack serotonin. It isn't that that's missing from your brain. Yeah. So that's really very interesting indeed.
That's the thing. So what I try and explain to my clients is that, you know, when you have an open wound, like you cut your hand, it starts bleeding, right? Like, you know how to fix it. You put some Band-Aid on it, Manuka honey, if you're like me, you put stuff on it. But like when your brain has an open wound or something like that, that's things when you see like brain fog, anxiety, depression, that's the inflammation happening in your brain. But because we don't see it as such, we see it as that's the problem, that's the root cause, this is why I feel this way. But really it's the symptom. Like it can majority of the time be treated. Like there are serious chemical imbalance things, but that's the rare majority when really it's just inflammation that's doing this to the body. A lot of us just want to kind of write it off and be like, oh, like, no, it runs in my, like, this is what I did. Because my mom had, I mean, my mother unexpectedly passed away and all that stuff, but she suffered from depression, like for her whole life and all that kind of stuff. So my family wrote it off and was like, oh, it just runs in the family. Like, that's what it is. And that's why I thought that was my path. I thought that is what I was set on. I was like, okay, it runs my family. We have chemical imbalances, like all this stuff. But what I learned, like with science, one, yes, okay, you have to have like epigenetics, you have to have the gene, right? Like it, you do have to have that, but you have to also have a pathogen to come in and stir this up. And then you have to have a leaky gut to set it off where it can come in and kind of break that blood brain barrier and set off that autoimmune response. So there's three phases to actually set this off and you're in control, you know? So when you take back your control, you can actually reverse all of that and get your happy hormones back into balance. And that's what I help people with.
Yeah. So are you saying then that essentially you can eat yourself, not eat yourself out of depression, I mean like sit there with a tub of ice cream, but you can nutritionalize, is that a word? Probably not. You can use the right nutrition to help yourself remove yourself from that mental illness. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So there's all the new studies that are granted, gut science is very new, but the new study in the way functional therapists are now actually approaching mental wellness is they're looking at lifestyle and nutrition first and medications last, which I am loving this new notion. Don't get me wrong. Medications are on the rise. They're the highest numbers they've ever been, especially in the UK right now with, it's like 14 million billion being dispensed each year or something. It's beyond, it's bananas. Yeah. But there is a huge new wave of science coming out of people going nutrition and lifestyle first, medications last. And that's what, how they're approaching depression now, especially with everything going on right now. Like, it's just lifestyle circumstances. You don't need, and I'm not here to say medications don't have their time and their place. They do, but they're only meant to be used for small doses. It's not a long-term solution because, again, depression and anxiety are the symptom, not the root cause.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, if you look at the trials that have been done with medications, certain medications, you know, the typical ones for depression, a lot of those say, well, they work, but in trials they showed that they worked only when used alongside things like talking therapy. So if you're thinking, do you know what, I feel depressed, I'm going to go to the doctor, get some medication and hope my life changes, I think you might be disappointed. I don't know.
I mean, that doesn't work. Like, we have to face whatever demon is causing it. And like, it's not, and I'm not saying like nutritional deficiencies is the only reason, but like, it could be when we're depressed, we're not eating properly. So it's this perpetual cycle going on. Like, for me, it was, you know, I lost my mom. I was depressed, whatever, anxious, going through that, didn't eat right, did not treat my body right. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I wasn't feeling well. Like, I was perpetuating that cycle. And it's not until you stop and you're like, okay, I'm not at fault for the things that happen in my life. I'm not in fault for my depression or anxiety, but I am responsible for how I'm choosing to respond right now.
Yeah.
And if I'm trying to do this quick route, what makes you think I'm going to have sustainable, long-lasting change? It might be a quick high where you feel a little bit normal, but then you numb out because you hit a plateau and then you have to cycle again. And then you're stuck into this routine where your brain actually gets adapted to these medications.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you come off of it, you're like, oh, I had a relapse of my symptoms, but really you're just withdrawing from the medications and you have to give it time and you have to re-nourish your brain and your body to fire those synapses on its own again, because it was so used to its reuptake being blocked by the serotonin or by the SSRIs, because that's what it is. It's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
So it blocks that. So when you can actually get back in balance and nourish your brain to fire those things more quickly, you can gain control again.
Wow. So do you think that everyone is capable of doing this, or do you think that some people have been down this road for such a long time and their bodies are potentially so damaged to the point where they can't necessarily, do you think that it's something that everyone is able to, I suppose, recover from, or do you think that not everyone is?
I mean, everyone is different, right? And like I said, there is the select few that actually do have major chemical imbalances and they need that nutrition, they need that psychological help, and they need the medications and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people, proper English here, there are people that can, it's, you know, when you're too deep, right? And if you want something else, and that's when you reach out and you kind of ask for help and you're okay, I'm at my wit's end. I want to take a different route with my healing.
Yeah. And so obviously I imagine part of what you do is you look at maybe the diet that someone has and you know, give some insight into why these things might be affecting their mental health. But you also mentioned maybe some sort of counseling element or some therapeutic element to what you do.
What I do with people is I meet with them bi-weekly. And so we jump on a call and we go through, yes, the nutritional practices, but we also apply the lifestyle thing. So what's your morning routine like? What is your stress management like? What is your relationships like? How are you actually, what's your purpose, right? And how do you find that? But when you're so lost in your health and you can only think about food all day long because you're in so much pain and this is your sense of control, you sit there and you're just like, okay, so what do I do? So I help people break free from those things and find other outlets.
Today's episode is presented by The Skin Store. For over 20 years, The Skin Store has been the number one destination for premium skincare, hair care, and beauty products. With over 8,000 different products from 300 different brands, The Skin Store has you covered for all your hair, cosmetics, supplements, and of course, skincare needs. Find your favourite brands like EltaMD, New Face, Olaplex, and more all in one place with gifts with every purchase. Right now, The Skin Store is offering our listeners 20% off your next purchase by using the code POD, that's code POD, P-O-D, for 20% off your next purchase at skinstore.com/pod.list. Skin Store. Have the confidence to tackle the day ahead.
Exclusions apply.
So I suppose, yeah, because if you're saying that someone's in a really stressful situation, and that might be because of the lifestyle that they have in terms of their career or their relationship, some of those things, I suppose, are easier for some people to move away from than others. Like if you have a really stressful job because you're an A&E doctor or something, and you love what you do, but it's stressful. How would you be able to support someone with that sort of situation if they can't change things?
I mean, you can still take responsibility, right? Like you can't change your job, but you can take 5 deep belly breaths in the morning and then you're in your sympathetic again. But like when you're eating, you take 4 deep belly breaths before you eat and after you eat. So you tap into that parasympathetic again. So you're digesting your food, right? Like I work with high achieving women, like they're running corporate companies. They're always stressed out.
Yeah.
They don't have time for themselves. They wake up, they have their babies, they have their companies, they have all that kind of stuff. So everyone is busy, but we have to take responsibility for, okay, if I want to actually function and show up to my job, that is highly, highly stressful and has odd hours and all that kind of stuff, where are the micro moments in my day that I can offload a little bit and put myself first? Because otherwise illness is going to catch up to you, right? Like if you don't take the time and be preventative in that, mm-hmm. high stressful jobs, when have you ever seen that work out nice? Like you get older, something happens, right? And so you have to be preventative and think forward so that you can take responsibility for that. So we find the micro moments. We see, okay, so it's some deep belly breathing here. It's different kind of functional foods there. It's making sure you actually have a nutrition routine, because when you're in high stressful jobs, you forget to eat, right? Like you're busy, you have lunch meetings, goes through, and it's all these kind of things, and getting into these routines of like, no, we need to stick to this, because consistency, stress management, and diversity are the 3 things you need to actually repair your digestive system and your nervous system. And so figuring out the different routines for each individual is that core.
Interesting. What do you think? And so obviously you've gone through your own journey with mental health and with IBS, and you mentioned how now those aren't things that you have to deal with anymore in terms of struggling with them. Would you say that that is like 100% you don't have depressed, you don't ever feel depressed anymore? Like those things are gone from your life?
That just does not exist. Like, but I would be, even today, I was walking into the grocery store with my boyfriend. I was like, I'm sad today. He's like, why? And I go, I don't really know. It's like, okay. But it's not in the way that it was before, right? Like I have emotions. You can't feel the highs of life if you're not feeling the depths.
Yeah.
But I have a perception on it where I'm not isolated and thinking like, this is the end of my life and I'm going to take my life, right? Like I have this awareness. I have the tools to also pull me out. Like today, once I get off this call with you, I'm going on a walk with my partner. Like that's, I'm like, okay, so how do I recalibrate for the day? And like say bloating, like we all get bloated. Like that just happened, but it's not, I have a piece of pizza and I'm on the bathroom floor for like 3 hours. Like it used to be, or like, I get flare ups and like all this kind of stuff that doesn't happen anymore. And so I don't need medications or any of that kind of stuff and feeling like a walking pharmacy. I don't have that in my life anymore. I'm able to actually live normally, like a normal person again.
Yeah, that's really. So basically, a lot of what you're saying, and it sounds like a lot of what you do, is about making people be accountable for their own lives, you know, and not think, actually, this is something a doctor will solve for me. This is something that science will solve for me. This is something that even you, you know, there's a limit to what you can do, isn't there, in terms of you can give people the advice, but it's up to them to take it. Am I right in saying that?
Exactly. It's being the advocate for your own life. I think we're so quick to be like, this diet will fix me, this supplement will fix me, this doctor will fix me. And it's like, no, like how often are you going to keep giving over your power to someone else before you reclaim yourself? And you just go, okay, like again, repeating, like, I'm not at fault for being ill. I'm not at fault for my autoimmunities, for my hormone imbalances, for my illness, for my IBS. I'm not at fault for that. I'm responsible for how I'm choosing to respond to it. And for so long, I was responding with elimination diets, medications, doctors, like making it worse, right? I was perpetuating the cycle. And I was like, wait, if this stuff was working, I would feel better already. Mm. But I'm stuck in this, someone else is going to fix me mentality. Instead of being like, oh, this is me, I was able to finally step into that.
Why do you think that so many people have this something else will fix me mentality? Why do you think that's so common?
It's easier to put blame on anyone else but ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. Like we love to say, like, I'm this way because of my parents. I'm this way because of my environment. I'm this way because the doctor did this, as opposed to being like, life freaking happens. But like, I can actually make this better by the choices I choose to show up and do daily.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. So, and I suppose for some people, if they've been doing that for so long and like saying, oh, you'll help me, you know, the idea of finally having to look at themselves and say, actually, no, you need to help me. Like, I need to help me. That's probably quite a hard thing to do, isn't it?
And it's scary, right? It's scary when we have to take responsibility, but that's why linking arms with someone that's been there within the trenches before is so, so pivotal. Like for me, when I finally did that, I had my naturopath, I had a good functional doctor, and I had a coach. That was the mental side of things. I was like, okay, and my therapist. I was like, okay, like I need my team to get me through this. But at the same time, only I can implement these steps, right? But we need someone to help keep us accountable and kind of guide us through step by step. Okay, so what is the next right move to do today? As opposed to like getting a book and being like, oh, I have to do all this stuff in one day and become like this guru and all of it. And you're like, okay, I'm not doing anything because that's just too much. Like, so when you take these steps is where you actually get
to. Yeah. So I suppose what you're saying there is taking accountability for your own life doesn't mean that you're going it alone. It doesn't mean that you can't ask for help.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, like I still to this day, I have coaches, I have mentors, I have, you know, people I link arms with, because with business, with life, like God bless my therapist, like all those kind of things. Because when you choose to take responsibility, you are not alone. That's what you realize. Because when you're sitting there playing the victim, or you're like succumbing to your illnesses or depression or anxiety or what have you, when you're in the swamp, right? You think you're alone. You're in it. And then you realize, oh, like I get to respond. I get to build my team around me. I get to actually, whatever pillar of my life I need support in, I get to pick the individuals I align with and feel supported at each chapter.
I love that. So when you take responsibility, you realize that you are not alone, because like you say, you can facilitate. And that's really, really empowering. And you were talking earlier about, you know, you're giving your power away. And I think you're right. We do. We kind of defer to for somebody else to make the decisions, which actually are decisions that only we really can make, because it's, you know, as much as you care about other people, you're the main character in your own life. And unless you sort yourself. Yeah. Wow. Enlightening. What would you say is kind of the biggest barrier that you face in the role that you do? What's the biggest obstacle that you face?
People want the quick fix.
Right.
And so like my program, right? Like it's 8 weeks and people are and all this kind of stuff. And so they think, oh, like, okay. And like eight, I don't know, like people want, what supplements can I take? What can I do? Da, 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 da. And I'm like, and this is before they start to work with me. Right. But like, that's the emails that flood my inbox every morning. It's like, what supplements do you take all the time? Da, da, da. I'm like, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I take like three supplements and that's it. Like,
yeah.
Have a magic pill for you. And that's the thing. It's like, oh, what food can I eliminate? Da, 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 da. And so that's my like busting through that, because the women I work with, it's what foods can I cut out? I need to be on this low FODMAP diet. I need to be on this fancy supplement. I should probably fast for like hours on end. And I'm like, actually, that's all the opposite of what you need to be doing. So actually breaking people free from what Dr. Google has told them.
Yeah.
Like, please stop coming to Google.
So you don't follow a FODMAP diet then, or anything like that?
No, I don't follow any of that. Because it doesn't, like, it's, food isn't the issue.
No.
Right? Yes, okay, you do have to take out some gut irritants and things like that, but it's not food and cutting out major food groups. One, if you have an eating disorder, what is that going to do for you? Like, that is just triggering. That's another word for an eating disorder. Like, that is glorifying something. And that's what I did. I was like, I'm low FODMAP, I'm Whole30, I'm vegan. But all of these things were just me masking my eating disorder with some type of different diet term.
Yeah. And so
the root of it, it's like, okay, no, actually food's not the issue. My digestive system is the issue. And my slow metabolic function and my stomach acid and all those kind of things in the leaky gut. So after, when I repair that, when I actually address that stuff and like my gut brain connection and my stress levels, I can actually eat normally. Like FODMAPs, that's not an issue. Like I love garlic and onions now. That's literally in every single dish.
Oh, is it? And that's, I'm guessing that's not on a FODMAP diet. Or
every single person is like, I can't have that. I'm like, actually, it's really good for you. You shouldn't eliminate them for so long.
Yeah. And also just in like a social context, if you are on a restrictive diet, and having been on a variety of different things, you know, in my past, oh, it just ruins the enjoyment. You know, you're the one there with the menu, which basically you can have one thing on and it's basically lettuce, or, you know, who wants to live like that? Yeah.
That's like, and like, that used to be the thing. And this was like one of those wake up moments for me with my IBS. Like after I was like so gung ho on it, I was going to my friend's birthday party and it was at one of my favorite Indian restaurants. But because I knew I couldn't eat there, I was sipping on a smoothie before going to this restaurant. So then I just sat, like, none of my clothes fit me anymore because I wasn't eating because I was so afraid of it. And then I would just go to these birthday parties and like sit there and not eating. And like my friends would just like stare at me. And then like one day, like my best friend was just like crying and she's like, you don't even see what's wrong, like with what you're doing. Because to me, I was like, it's not an eating disorder. I'm healing my gut. But it was, no, that is not, that's not normal life. You should be able to enjoy moments like that without like hyperventilating about what's going to be on the food. Will this cause a flare up? Da, 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 da. Like you should know that, one, take responsibility. Like I know when I go eat Indian food, I'm going to be a little bit bloated. So I'm going to wear looser clothing and I'm probably going to take some digestive enzymes and sip on some ginger tea when I get home. But I'm not crippled on the bathroom floor anymore. And that's that. That's where you get to that normal area, because I don't know anyone that can eat Indian food and not be bloated after, like, and if you're out there, please DM me. I'd love to know, but.
Yeah. Well, I always think of my dad. My dad, he is really, when it comes to sell-by dates, he's not fazed. You know, if something's got a bit of green fur on it, he'll just cut it off and he'll eat it. If somebody else ate that food, they would be, you know, really ill. But because his body is so used to it and his you know, digest, you know, and I suppose maybe that's like a really random metaphor for what you're saying. It's the idea of, well, you're not going to be tolerant of something. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that anyone eat moldy food. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just giving an example of how you can actually adapt your digestion to work for you.
You can strengthen it. That's the thing. But you got to use it. That's the other thing, that you have to make sure your diet is diverse and consistent and you have no stress around it. Because if you're like stressed out about the menu, about like what's going to be in it, da, da, da. No, even if you ate one piece of lettuce, you are going to bloat because you're so stressed out. Yeah. That's the way that works.
You're right. I always end my episodes by asking kind of the biggest learning curve of whoever I'm interviewing's career. So just to try and, I suppose, synthesize everything that you've learned throughout your whole life and your whole career just down into one key thing, I'm sure, you know, that'll be really easy for you.
Oh, goodness. Learning curve. I mean, when I first started out, I thought it was food, right? Like even my studies, everything like that, I thought it was food. And I was just like trying to manipulate and fight and what have you. And I always, always, always tell my girlies, you cannot be at war with your body and win. Like you will never ever win that battle. You are trying to manipulate, you're trying to out diet, you're trying to out supplement, you're trying to outrun. It's never going to work. Yeah. And you're just keep being stuck in this perpetual cycle. And the sooner you surrender and learn that everything that's happening on your body, as funky and annoying and frustrating as it might be, it's a sign, it's a symptom, it's a thing that should be leaned into and welcomed so you can learn more. That was my biggest thing, is just like trying to like shut down these symptoms. I'm like, no, okay, supplement this, diet this. And I'm like, oh wait, no, that's a signal. So now anytime I get any type of thing, I'm just like, okay, so what is my body trying to tell me? Do I need to pay a little more attention? Do I need to cut something down a little bit? Do I need to add more in? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Laura. It's been really, really eye-opening. I've definitely learned a lot. I'm sure my listeners have as well. So thank you so much for coming on.
Of course. Thank you for having me. And if anyone wants to come hang out over on Instagram, it's LauraMartin_H2H. And that's where all my fun stuff is, and always just like in my DMs. So come say hello.
Brilliant. I will definitely link your Instagram down below so people can find you.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed, please do click below and you can review me. If you're interested in anything that Laura had to say and want to hear further from her, then please do click on her profile and learn more about her from the links below. Next week, I'll be joined by Rachel Brown, who is all into holistic treatments. We'll be talking Reiki, we'll be talking virtual Reiki, we'll be talking all sorts of things holistic. See you then.